Program and the Odessa American Sunday Business and Oil Sections. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 74 and partly cloudy. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 70s. Then, tomorrow, sunny with a high in the upper 90s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the upper 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
Welcome to this week's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American Sunday Lifestyle Sections, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Sunday, May 31st, 2020, Life and Times. Growing up in Odessa. Book focuses on author's life during 1950s and 60s. By Tony Venegas, T-V-E-N-E-G-A-S, at OAOA.com. What started off as a collection of essays meant for friends and family has turned into a bigger purpose for Michael Lewis Moore. That collection is now a book entitled The Victim Mentality. Defeated, and it provides a glimpse of Moore's life growing up in Odessa during the late 1950s and early 1960s, and how he overcame his struggles of being within a dysfunctional family. Years ago, when I put together this collection of growing up in a really crazy family, I did it for my kids so that they would know their family history, said Moore, who now lives in San Marcos. I wanted them to know that things can change drastically. While the book focuses on both the good and bad, it also offers Moore and the readers a chance to reminisce on how things were growing up in Odessa. One of the key settings in the book and his life is the old Tommy's Drive-In restaurant that was located near Odessa College. Moore ended up putting his early writings on his website, along with other memories of growing up around the drive-in culture at the time. Also featured on the site and on the back cover of the book is a painting by Robbie Reddy of Tommy's Drive-In. The website is a collection of all the good I experienced in Odessa, none of the bad, Moore said. It was a fun place to grow up in all at the time. Moore added that later on that the 1973 film American Graffiti could have been Odessa back when he was growing up, and it's given others a chance to relive those days as well. It got noticed pretty fast by a whole bunch of people that I didn't think I knew, he said. People still tell me that they go back there to reminisce. It was not all fun times for Moore growing up, however. Some of the struggles that Moore had to overcome include the loss of his grandfather, his parents getting a divorce, and his grandmother dying shortly after taking him and his siblings in. Moore said it took him a long time to move past those struggles, and while he did that, he said he began to realize that telling his story may be helpful to others as well. As I got older, I began to think it might be important to others who grow up in dysfunctional families to learn about what I did over that period of time, Moore said. That's when the book started to come together around a year ago, Moore said. With the help of his wife, Jane, and a hired editor, Moore was able to put together the book, which started at around 10,000 to 12,000 words, to the 222-page book that was published in March and now available online. The theme of the book revolves around overcoming that victim mentality, a cause that Moore said he became passionate about over the course of his life. He hopes that those who read his book can learn more about his life and get others back on the right track if they feel similar to how he did growing up. What I hope that people get out of it is how to at least recognize if you're playing the victim role, he said. If you bring it to a macro level, it puts you in a perpetual pity party. The bottom line is that I was looking for confidence and couldn't find it until I recognized the problem. I just told myself to hell with this and just gave it a shot because I can't afford to wait around and hope that someone comes around to help me get out of a mess. When that happened, it gave me confidence that I was looking for. Follow Tony Venegas on Twitter at OA_TVENEGAS. Want to buy the book? TINYUR.com/YCURJ4Y3. Census needs good response. Officials call on Ector County citizens to do their part. By Bob Campbell, BCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Getting an accurate census count in Ector County may be a little easier this year than it was 10 years ago, and officials hope the citizenry responds so that manifold benefits may be derived. Starting Friday, the U.S. Census Bureau has put a dozen people on the ground delivering questionnaire packets to people's front doors in Ector and Midland counties, but the department is also encouraging citizens to log on to census.gov and use that more direct method to complete the brief questionnaires. Some people might be fearful that their information isn't safe or protected, said Census spokeswoman Brenda McDonald of Lubbock. But the Census Bureau is required by law to protect respondents' answers. Responses are used only to produce statistics. We do not disclose any personal information. The 2010 census showed Ector County with 137,130 people and Odessa with 99,940. A July estimate last year was that the city had grown to 123,334, while Midland had blossomed from 111,147 to 146,038 during the same period. County Commissioner Eddie Shelton, whose Precinct 1 includes West Odessa, said that unincorporated area of 50,000 to 70,000 people has been the main problem. We're still getting a poor response in West Odessa, but we should have more participation because we have broadband internet services for the first time, Shelton said. He said better results would have meant more than the $2.6 million the county was just awarded under the CARES, Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, which was apportioned on the basis of $180 per capita. Shelton said responding via the internet is best and easiest way. It takes a very small amount of time and is one of those things where the benefits will come, although you won't see them tangibly right up front, he said. If you've ever wondered why Midland gets more stores and restaurants, it's because they have a better count. Shelton said higher numbers would have brought more medicine from the federal government to battle COVID-19, and they would result in more goods and services and more highway funding in the future. Precinct 4 Commissioner Armando Rodriguez said South Ector County, which he represents, has also proved recalcitrant in the past. A lot of times, people didn't want to fill out the forms because of their immigration status, Rodriguez said. They still have that concept, but this information is only for the census. They won't give it to any other agency of the government. Rodriguez said he and other leaders are pushing it with the Spanish radio and TV stations, saying, "Don't worry about that anymore because you have a responsibility to do this. We're putting the burden on the community, saying, "We have a responsibility and we have to do our part," he said. Rodriguez said the Census Bureau stands ready to answer questions at 1-800-923-8282. Master Gardeners, Two Sweet Potatoes That Thrive in West Texas Weather by Debbie Rowland, Master Gardener. There are two forms of sweet potatoes, vining and bush varieties. Both are easy to grow and thrive in hot weather. Sweet potatoes are a great source of beta-carotene, which is easily converted by the body into vitamin A. Sweet potatoes require full sun in a warm climate. They must be planted in a well-drained, fine, sandy loam soil with a slightly acidic pH, 5 to 7.5. This allows the sweet potato to grow easily, but not remain in a moist environment that encourages rot and disease. They are not started by seeds, but by slips. Slips are shoots that form on the outside of a mature sweet potato. You can buy them or use shoots from a sweet potato in your kitchen. To produce slips, buy healthy, disease-free sweet potatoes from a local market. Scrub them clean and then cut them in half. Suspend each half over a jar of water by inserting toothpicks so that half is submerged in the water. Place the sweet potato near a window for warmth and sunlight. Over the next few weeks, shoots will form on top. Keep the beds weed-free until the vines have covered the soil fully. Maintaining a weed-free area, especially in the first 40 days after planting, will improve yield quantity and quality at harvest. Plant in full sun with about 3 to 4 feet between rows. Using a hand shovel, dig a hole 4 inches to 5 inches deep and 3 inches wide. Place one slip in each hole about 12 inches to 18 inches apart. When harvesting, carefully dig around the outside of the plant to loosen the soil. The sweet potato root has a delicate skin that is easily bruised at harvest. Take care not to bruise the roots with a hoe, shovel, or other harvesting tool. Even dropping the potatoes into a harvest bucket will injure the skin. For home gardeners, the best time to harvest sweet potatoes is immediately before or just after the first fall frost. When the sweet potato leaves turn yellow, growth has stopped and the roots have matured. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or at 686-4700 in Midland or visit aggiehorticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. Texas Master Gardeners, we are an educational service organization of volunteers trained by Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Service. Visit westtexasgardening.org. Let butterflies enhance your garden. Butterflies are known for their beautiful wings and graceful flight. They are also great pollinators. It is important to keep them around your garden for this reason. Butterflies taste with their feet. This is to help them identify where to lay their eggs. If they taste a plant that is edible for their larva, they will lay their eggs on that plant. Different butterfly larvae require different diets. The most common butterfly, the monarch, requires a diet of milkweed. The milkweed is poisonous to humans but beneficial to the butterflies. When planting milkweed plants, be mindful of the white sap or milky substance it secretes when pulled apart. It may cause an allergic reaction when in contact with your skin. Butterflies use their long tongue or their proboscis to reach down the flower head and feed on the sap of the flower. During this process, they are covered in pollen, effectively spreading it from feeding to feeding. Butterflies have smooth, slender bodies, knobbed antennae, and they rest with their wings upright. They have bright colored wings that are the result of loose powdery scales on their wings. This characteristic is the origin of their Latin order name, Lepidoptera, meaning scale wing. Look into planting a butterfly garden with all host-specific flowers such as milkweed, asters, black-eyed Susan, sedum, or violets. It's a great way to attract a variety of beautiful butterflies and help them pollinate. For more information, call the AgriLife office at 498-4071 in Odessa or at 686-4700 in Midland, or visit aggie-horticulture.tamu.edu or westtexasgardening.org. Gardening. Jeanette Castanone. Castanone is a horticulturist with Texas AgriLife Extension Service. She can be reached at 686-4700 or by email at jeanette.castanone, that's J-E-A-N-E-T-T-E, .C-A-S-T-A-N-O-N, at ag.tamu.edu. Pets of the Week. Jasmine, a 4-year-old female Doberman mix, needs to be adopted into a good home. To adopt Jasmine or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 7012 Mockingbird Lane, call 381-5503, visit www.odessahumanesociety.org, or leave a message at facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa/. Judd, a 1-year-old male kitten, needs to be adopted into a good home. To adopt Judd or any of the other pets at the Humane Society of Odessa, stop by 7012 Mockingbird Lane, call 381-5503, visit www.odessahumanesociety.org, or leave a message at facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa/. The Humane Society of Odessa is a no-kill pet adoption shelter, and all their pets require spay-neuter contract along with an adoption application. Adoption fees for pets start at $50. Displaying content on the big screen. Q. During the COVID-19 stay-at-home period, we have enjoyed the many free online entertainment services such as the Met Opera nightly streaming videos, similar Broadway HD musicals, etc., but all efforts to make wireless screen mirroring / Miracast work using my laptop have proved futile. I have to report to a 15-foot HDMI cable strung along the floor to view the videos on the big screen of my Sony Bravia 4K TV. Running network setup on the TV, my laptop is recognized by name as being screen mirroring capable. I have set up internet on 2.4 rather than 5.0 as required and complied as best I can with all other requirements. Attempting to do it wirelessly, I select screen mirroring as the input to my TV. Click on the icon at the extreme lower right corner of my laptop screen, then select Connect, and initially connect successfully to the video, but then it drops off after less than a minute of viewing. The TV screen goes black with a diagnostic "Cannot connect with device." I then have to revert to either using my iPhone/Apple TV or the 15-foot HDMI cable in a wired configuration, rather than my laptop Lenovo in a wireless screen mirroring configuration. Can you help? Roland G. Destin, Florida. A. I can explain what's going on, but whether that's a help will be for you to say. Let's start by clarifying some terminology. There are several methods of displaying content from a computer screen on a TV. They go by many different names and are not compatible with one another. In looking at this as a generic topic, you'll find terms like screen mirroring, Wi-Fi Direct, cast to device, Miracast, AirPlay, Chromecast, and probably others. You need to make sure you're using the same technology on both ends to achieve success. Let's start with your TV. This is an easy one for me since I also happen to own a Sony Bravia. Allow me to cite from a pop-up box from my own set under the screen mirroring setup. Wi-Fi-enabled devices, such as smartphones and tablets, that support Miracast can be used to enjoy screen mirroring on your Bravia TV. Refer to the instruction manual of your Wi-Fi device to find out if it supports Miracast. Bravia TV complies with the Miracast specification, but does not guarantee a successful connection with all devices. So, per the TV's own help screens, it wants devices that support Miracast. The Bravia is an Android device, so it also has built-in support for Google Cast, also known as Chromecast. Now for some bad news. The model of computer that you cited to me does not support Miracast. Yes, I know, your TV detected it when you tried to do the setup. You'll find the opposite is also true. When you go to Devices in the Windows Setup and click Add Device, it will detect your TV without an issue. However, as surprising as it may sound, that does not mean you will have the ability to treat your TV as an external wireless monitor to your laptop. What it does mean is that you have the ability to cast media files from the computer to the TV by right-clicking on one and selecting Cast to Device. There are also a few rare cases where you can stream internet media, such as YouTube clips, but probably not the media you cited in your question. That doesn't necessarily mean you're out of luck. Your Bravia is, after all, a smart TV. I did a little looking and discovered that there is a Met Opera On Demand app that is very likely compatible with your TV. If not, Broadway HD is available through Amazon, and your TV also has an available Amazon app. As you can see, there is a large amount of untapped potential built right into your smart TV. Look for the Google Play Store in the menus, and you'll find that your TV is more of a computer than you ever suspected. Once you begin poking around in the available apps, you'll find that you can also load a basic web browser, which will allow you to visit websites for media that doesn't have dedicated apps. To view additional content, comment on articles, or submit a question of your own, visit my website at itsgeektome.co, not .com. It's Geek to Me, Jeff Werner. Werner is a software engineer and has been writing this column since 2007. You can find his past articles at itsgeektome.co.
Hello, this is Michael. I'll be reading Tumbleweed Smith's column, published in the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Saturday, May 30th, 2020. Colorado Bend State Park is off the beaten path. Gorman Falls is park's main attraction. Water cascades 70 feet down a steep bluff at Colorado Bend State Park, south of San Saba. The area is known as Gorman Falls and has more than one stream. There is a narrow rush of water just a few feet away from the tall one. The water moves fast down a crevice between a tall bluff and a caliche hillside. It's a shady spot with an observation deck overlooking the Colorado River. The waterfalls never quit flowing and provide a pleasing sound to enjoy while you recover from your hike to the falls. We had made arrangements to meet Debbie Hicks, the interpretive resource manager of the park. I'm glad we did, because the drive to the park is long enough for you to think you'll never get there. But the highway has lots of curves and passes through some beautiful hills and valleys. We are definitely off the beaten path. The road got paved 6 years ago. Before that, it was a caliche road, so it was a long time getting here. You had to drive between 10 and 15 miles per hour. Once the road got paved, that opened up the public even more. Our visitation last year was 78,000 and included visitors from Iran, Peru, Spain, Norway, Australia, and New Zealand. Also, when you pass that first cattle guard in the park, this is open rangeland. No fences. Cows are on the highway. Debbie told us that the trail to get to the falls is challenging. That didn't scare us because my wife Susan and I are in good shape. I'm glad she warned us because it is a treacherous journey to the falls. We climbed into Debbie's pickup and drove to the falls trailhead. Debbie told us we had a mile and a half hike ahead of us. There's very little shade out here, she told us, and the last 45 yards of that trail is at a 45-degree angle. There's cable to hold on to, but the rock is so slick from all the foot traffic, it's like walking on glass. Gorman Falls is the main attraction at the park, which covers 5,300 acres. It's a popular destination for hikers and mountain bikers. It's ups and downs and switchbacks, and it's just wonderful. We have a rugged park here with different types of terrain and difficult trails. We have a lot of caves. The park has 61 campsites. Motorhomes must be self-contained. The Colorado River offers all kinds of activities, including fishing for white bass and crappie. There's fly fishing, boating, kayaking. You can swim in some parts of the river itself. We're 10 miles from the mouth of Lake Buchanan, which is the beginning of the Upper Highland Lakes. Some folks will put in at the boat ramp that we have here, go down to Lake Buchanan, spend the day, and come back up. While the park is mostly for active people, some folks go there for peace and quiet that they find at the Spicewood Canyon Overlook. The wind rustles by and birds chirp. It's a serene spot.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, May 30th, 2020. Nurse Finds Her Calling by Ruth Campbell. For most of her life, Sharon Meeks has either been a nurse or taught nursing. The inspiration for her vocation was her father. Meeks, who lives in Midland and teaches nursing at University of Texas Permian Basin, said she began working in a hospital as a nurse's aide when she was 16. She has been a registered nurse since 1983, earning her associate degree from McLennan Community College in Waco, her bachelor's degree from University of Texas at Arlington, and her doctorate from UT Tyler. She and her husband Wesley have two children and two grandchildren. Added why she became a nurse, Meeks said, "That's easy. My dad was one of the first kidney transplants they did in the state of Texas in 1972. He was 28 years old, and I was 5, and I watched him my entire life struggle with a chronic disease that's very devastating and in and out of the hospital," Meeks said. "Watching the nurses with him in the critical care unit was amazing, so it just inspired me to do the same thing, and that's how I wound up here." Her father worked in Midland and was involved in an oil field accident around 1971. He was in the hospital for 2 years. We lived here with my mom. When I was about 13, we moved to Central Texas. This time she has lived in Midland since 1990 and began working at Midland Memorial Hospital. Meeks was a clinical educator at Midland Memorial Hospital, and eventually she became a full-time nursing instructor. She left Midland Memorial Hospital about a year and a half ago and was an adjunct instructor at UTPB for 4 semesters before she started teaching full-time in the fall of 2018. Meeks is teaching pharmacology, medical surgical nursing, medical surgical nursing clinical, and advanced medical surgical. The pandemic, she feels, will attract more people to the profession. "I do believe that," Meeks said. "Our numbers actually show that.